downfield. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
What an end zone punt. Throws an interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings, right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow with you. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. It's all presented by DraftKings. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Giants, 2 days off their 31-21 loss to the Dallas Cowboys down in Big D. And we're going to get a little bit of a bye week report this week. And to do that, we're going to be joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. Kind of give us his bye week report, see where the Giants are at here heading in to their bye. And now on the line, and we are joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. You can find him on Twitter at PFF_Pete. Pete, good afternoon. How you doing, pal? And another rough one for the Giants on Sunday against Big D.
And yeah, that was really a tough one. Things kind of change really quickly in the NFL these days. A couple weeks ago, Giants are flying high. They look unstoppable. And now you got 2 weeks to think about how to turn the season around.
Well, Pete, I know you've gone over all of your grades from this past week, and Pro Football Focus had Will Beatty ranked as the highest left tackle in the National Football League a few weeks ago. That is not the status anymore. What has been the Achilles heel of Beatty and the offensive line? Is it the run blocking, or is it really the penalties more so?
You know, I think the penalties are absolutely a problem, but I feel really and it's funny because you think McAdoo, a West Coast offense, lots of passing. They've got Eli, and he's having a bit of a renaissance season. But I think it's sort of the team goes, or the offense goes, as the running game goes for these guys, because first couple weeks couldn't really get the running game going so well, and then in that three-game stretch, they were one of the best run-blocking teams in the league, and you saw Rashad Jennings just, you know, racking up yards. And now the last couple weeks, their run blocking has basically taken a turn down south again. For the second week in a row, not a single starting offensive lineman earned a positive run block grade from us. So, you know, Beatty and Pugh the week before him, they both had you know, the basis of their really bad grades were in pass blocking. But I'd say as the unit as a whole across the board, they've just taken, you know, a big decline as run blockers these last couple weeks.
Yeah, Pete, I mean, is this a situation where the guys across them are just beating them up? Are they not winning individual battles? Is this a unit issue? What's going wrong here, and what's the aberration now? Is it the last 2 weeks and the game against Detroit, or is it the three-week midseason stretch where they played well? What is this Giants offensive line group?
You know, it's almost tough to put a beat on it too, because, you know, it's not like you could point to a strength of schedule sort of thing. Yeah, when they play the Falcons, that's not a good defensive front in Atlanta. But one of their best weeks running was against the Texans, and you know, you've got J.J. Watt in there, and the Texans have a pretty decent pretty decent front. So it's not like, you know, they're just struggling against great teams. I honestly, looking the last couple weeks specifically, I think it seems more so they're failing as a unit. You have, you know, you just have these plays where, you know, they're all trying to wash to one side, and they're all trying to kind of, it just seems like the line of scrimmage is getting pushed back where you know, when Andre Williams gets to, you know, he's not even getting to the line of scrimmage without being contacted before it. Last week against the Cowboys, they had about 76% of their rushing yards, and they still rush for over 100 yards, but 76% of it came after contact. So it just seems like, you know, it's not necessarily a one-on-one battles thing. It's just across the board they're not getting enough push, and it's something that you hope that they, you know, as they gel a little bit more throughout the season, they get better at. But it's disconcerting to see that setback after they're doing so well there in weeks 3 to 5.
Talking with Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. And Pete, you just alluded to the rushing numbers from the Cowboys game. I was looking over your grades, and, you know, to the casual fan, they'll look at Andre Williams' performance, and nothing really jumps off the page because a lot of it was 1 and 2 yard runs outside of maybe that 22-yard run. But you picked up on the fact that he actually forced a number of missed tackles in this game. So how do you evaluate his performance, and what exactly stood out to you in Andre Williams' status out of this contest?
Yeah, and it's easy to look at the last couple games where they struggled to run and see that Rashad Jennings was hurt and say, okay, well, you know, Jennings, you know, he's the good running back, and Andre Williams is struggling because he's a rookie. But it's more so the guys in front of him. Williams, you know, he didn't earn a positive rushing grade from us, but, you know, for a game where he got the ball a lot, didn't do much with it, he still, you know, he was just, I mean, we had him at a minus 0.5, which isn't bad at all. It's just that, like I said, you know, a lot of his yards had to come after contact. You mentioned that the five missed tackles he forced rushing were his most in any game this season. So it just seemed like every time he had to work hard just to get those extra yards, you know, before he even got to the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, that, you know, Andre Williams was the reason their running game has stalled the last couple weeks. And in the same vein, just because Rashad Jennings may come back against the Colts, that doesn't mean that he's going to be the panacea and all of a sudden things are going to flip on again. I think a lot of it has to do with the guys in front of them.
And Weston Richburg had another poor game. You guys had him at a minus 4 grade against Dallas after a minus 3.3 against Philly. You know, you got to start to wonder now. He came out of college as a center. They've had him at guard. You wonder at some point, Pete, do they have to make that switch to try to get him to play a little bit better?
Yeah, honestly, I think that's probably a good point. I would consider it. He's been very boom or bust this season. You know, he had this sort of upward trajectory where he started out very poorly against the Lions and equal, you know, slightly less poor against the Cardinals, and then kind of went up from there. But now he's kind of going back down the other way. So, you know, I think at this point, once they get Jeff Schwartz back, which will hopefully be in the near future, they can start kind of mixing and matching these guys to find the best combination. Because although it looked great a few weeks ago, and the funny thing is when we did our quarterly offensive line rankings, we had the Giants in third just because they looked so great after that Falcons game, and nevertheless, you know, a couple weeks later, it looks like, you know, they will be welcoming Schwartz back and probably trying to fit him in somewhere because they're not doing so well anymore.
All right, we're joined by Pete Domelatis for Pro Football Focus. Two other things I want to touch on offense very quickly, Pete, from me. One, you guys didn't grade Larry Dinello out too poorly in terms of run blocking. I thought I saw him get beat a few times during the game. And the other guy you guys said played a pretty decent game was Justin Pugh. And just from watching the game, I thought George Selfie got a decent amount of penetration on him over the course of the two games. Can you talk about the job those two guys did in the blocking game, specifically Pugh and Dinello?
Yeah, Justin Pugh, you know, he actually had his it's funny because he had one of his worst games of his career against the Eagles, and, you know, but sandwiched around that are two games, you know, against the Falcons and the Cowboys where he didn't give up a single quarterback pressure. So, you know, it seemed like maybe Selvey may have been getting a little bit of push, but I mean, on those plays, you know, I think, you know, I'm not sure specifically which ones you're talking about, but maybe it was one where Eli was able to get the ball out on the early side. But, you know, looking back at it, you know, didn't really notice any real problems with Pugh. His struggles were in the running game like the rest of the offensive line, but he did a good job of bouncing back as a pass blocker after kind of not doing so well against Eagles at all. And Dinell, kind of same thing. You know, his run blocking wasn't great this week. It wasn't poor. You know, it was particularly poor against the Eagles, but didn't really notice anything on film about him being particularly beat either, outside of a couple bad plays. But, you know, it's got those kind of things where, you know, you have a couple bad plays that are really noticeable, but then you've got a couple good blocks here and there, and it sort of evens out the grade a little bit more than you'd expect.
Well, Pete, what was noticeable about Larry Dinell's performance was he was once again heavily involved in the passing game. In the last two games, Larry Dinell was nowhere to be found. Part of it was because his targets were down. So he's targeted seven times. He makes all his catches. What did you see out of his ability to all of a sudden adjust to the Dallas defense? Because one of the things we talked about over the last few weeks, Pete, was he was getting jammed at the line, and the lack of physicality prevented him from being a big-time playmaker.
Yeah, I think the Giants did a good job of isolating him on guys like, you know, like a Justin Durant, and in general, I think they did a good job of exploiting the Cowboys linebackers and safeties in this game. I mean, they, you know, you saw some things with Dinell, you saw some things with Daniel Fells as well. You know, I think that, you know, I didn't pay particular attention to how much they moved him around the line compared to last week against the Eagles, but I think that, you know, having Odell Beckham out there and being a little bit more of a focus, and obviously, you know, Randall is Randall, and he's getting, you know, the five straight games with the most targets of any Giants receiver. So, you know, I think because they had, you know, Eli had a little more success getting it to those guys, it opened up a little bit more for Danell. So, you know, his breakout actually comes as a surprise because I didn't see any of this coming in preseason or previous years. But I mean, he's doing a great job of adjusting balls in the air and making the tough catches. He doesn't have a single drop this year yet. So, I mean, he's impressed me, and I think that, you know, defenses are still going to game plan against him, but it comes down to how well Beckham and Randall do on the outside to kind of open things up for him in the middle.
I think most people watching the game, Peter, were joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus, thought Eli Manning played a great game. You guys had a season-high plus 3.7 grade on him, so no surprises there. Want to ask you specifically about one of his targets, and I don't think we've spoken since Odell Beckham got back onto the field. From a watching film perspective, what do you guys see from Beckham? What does he bring to the field for the Giants?
I think the biggest thing he brings for them is that deep threat one-on-one kind of receiver, and Eli's two targets this week, over 20 yards, both went to Beckham. And I think that he's that kind of guy where I don't think Eli's as – I think Eli, especially after last season, is a little reluctant to kind of throw that ball up there to a guy like Randall who, you know, sometimes, you know, his routes can be inconsistent and it could get them in trouble. But Beckham's the kind of guy where if Eli sees one-on-one coverage outside and there's no safety help, that he's going to go to him all the time. So – I think Beckham's that kind of guy who can win those one-on-one matchups, especially with the ball in the air consistently. So, you know, I thought that they might try to get him in the slot a little bit more this week after Cruz went out, but it just turned out that they slid Preston Parker right into that role. Parker, 29 of his 30 routes were from the slot. Beckham only ran two routes from the slot, and one of them was that touchdown on fourth down. But it just seems like they're content having him there on the outside where he can have the most space to fight against guys one-on-one. And I think that's a pretty good job for them or decision for them in the interim until, you know, maybe if Parker really doesn't bring any production, then they might have to start moving Beckham around. But I think being able to win those one-on-one matchups is a huge key for them.
And one of the key one-on-one matchups in this last game as we switch sides to the defense, Pete, was Dez Bryant against Prince Amukamara. And, you know, you had him with a decent grade, even though it was in the negative. Talk about Prince's performance. He was highly challenged against Dez, and Dez had over 100 receiving yards. But, I mean, that was some battle to watch this past Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it was really fun to watch, and ultimately not fun if you're a Giants fan because you came up on the losing end of it. But it just seemed like they were battling back and forth all game, and it was surprising too because in years past, Perry Fuel, he's kind of preferred to keep his cornerbacks on one side. So Prince has been on the right for almost all of his snaps, just covering whoever lines up across from him. This year, I think partly because they got Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, partly because they wanted Amukamara to get a little more aggressive, they've had them switch sides, shadow guys. And I thought that with DRC hurt and banged up and only playing limited snaps, they might go back to that one cornerback per side. But they just said, okay, Prince, you and Dez, you're shadowing him, you know, do the best you can. And frankly, he didn't do a bad job. It's just it's a testament to how good Romo was. And Romo earned one of the best grades we've given him in a long time. And how good Dez was, where you just saw these play after play where Prince was in great position. You know, he wasn't, you know, he was just right on top of him, and it's just that sort of perfect slant pass that you can't stop. And, you know, it's just really tough when two guys are on such a good page that, you know, Prince, who played a pretty good game, and you even saw that play where I believe it was a JPP hit Romo, and yeah, the ball was slightly underthrown, and Prince made the diving play to knock it out of Dez's hands. I mean, that was a very athletic play. You know, he had a good game in coverage, and against a lot of other receivers, he had a good good grade from us. It's just that when you're up against two guys that are playing as well as Romo and Dez did, Prince was kind of in a really tough spot there.
And Pete, one of the great matchup on defense for the Giants was Jason Pierre-Paul, one of your best ranked 4-3 defensive ends this year, going up against Tyron Smith, one of the best left tackles in the league. And it looked like JPP got the best of Smith for the most part over the course of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason Pierre-Paul, so he before he had the highest grade we'd given any 4-3 defensive end this season for his game against the Falcons. And now he has the second highest with his game against the Cowboys. He had a plus 7.9 grade, which is ridiculous. And he got some consistent pressure. He got those two sacks he had and a couple other pressures as well, quarterback hit. But he also had he did a lot of his damage in the run game. He had a team high 6 defensive stops. It's the kind of play where also not even if he's not making a defensive stop, he was still getting right at the point of attack and diverting DeMarco Murray outside to where other guys would have the chance to get him. And it's funny, I heard that on one of the pregame shows this week. They were talking about how, JPP, he doesn't have a lot of sacks, and I think it was Hankins is leading the team in sacks, and, he's got to step up, and they mentioned that on the broadcast. And that is the epitome of box score scouting.
Yep.
Guys
yeah.
who just look at the stats and say, oh, he doesn't have a lot of sacks. He's not doing well. It could not be more further from the truth. We have him as our second highest rated 4-3 defensive end this season. His run grade is twice as high as any other person in his position. He has 19 run stops. The next highest guy has 14. He's just been a beast. And if you just look at the final score, or the box score, it's not going to show up there. But when you look at the film, he just pops out on every play. And he's having a heck of a season in a contract year. And hoping the Giants can bring him back next year because he's absolutely a huge asset.
Talking with Pete Donalanis for Pro Football Focus, and the Giants could use a few more JPPs, Pete, in order to stop the run more consistently, because that has been a troubling aspect, as well as surrendering the big plays. And one of the things that you picked up on in your grading is a number of missed tackles in this Cowboys game. Just talk a little bit about that, specifically in the secondary at that safety spot, which seems to be an area that they need to shore up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, you think of, how just a few months ago Giants were coming into this season with, Will Hill and Antrell Roland, Stevie Brown coming back. It looked like safety was stacked. And now you have Quentin Demps out there, and he's just he had a very poor game for the second game in a row. He had 3 missed tackles, which were the most on the team. Antrell Roll had a couple missed tackles himself. It just seemed that, you saw a lot of those plays where they were bouncing Murray to the outside a lot of times because JPP was doing good work in there, and they just were unable to wrap him up on the outside. Or you saw that memorable Dez play where he caught the ball and was just literally flinging guys off him. So it was not a good game, for the secondary in run support. I mean, it's a big reason why, across the board, they all had poor run defense grades. With the exception of Prince Amukamara. It was just a very poor game for them tackling wise. And really, they have to kind of get that shored up. I'm not against bringing maybe Stevie Brown back in to see if maybe he's learned from his time on the bench, because Demps is coming off 2 bad games and they need to shore that up quick because it's really been hurting them lately.
All right, Pete, final question. This will kind of be a big overarching type of question. Can this Giants team, the way it's constructed now, with the injuries that they have, no more Victor Cruz, we'll see how long Colin Jenkins is out, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, maybe he's battling this injury the rest of the year, John Beeson, maybe the same deal, Jennings, we'll see if he gets back versus the Colts. This Giant roster is presently constructed, Pete, with the way they're playing and the talent of the players on the team. Can they get to 10 wins, which right now looks like the number they're going to have to get to in order to make it into the playoffs? Can they put enough consistent games together to get to that number they need to be a playoff team?
Yeah, I honestly think they can. It's tough to remember now after these last 2 games. It was only a few weeks ago where they looked like, they had one of the best offensive lines in the league, and they haven't had any injuries there, and they're only going to get better once Jeff Schwartz gets back. And despite losing Victor Cruz, who was absolutely a huge loss, they still showed you last game that they're able to move the ball, even against the Cowboys. It was unfortunate because a lot of those drives stalled at the worst time, but they were able to move the ball and just kind of sputtered at the Cowboy 40-yard line a couple times, so and still put up 21 points too. So it wasn't a terrible game for them by any means. And on defense, I think they need to switch some guys around. Mathias Kiwanuka, as versatile a player as he's been for them over the last few years, as good a soldier as he's been, I think it's time for him to start taking some fewer snaps and getting DeMontre Moore and Robert Ayers a little more involved, given how well they've done this season. But, I mean, they definitely still have the talent on the defensive side of the ball. You just want to see them have a good outing and a good win against a good opponent, because, you know, they came close again. They probably should have won the Cardinals game against a team that has turning out to be one of the best in the NFL. Last week was definitely a winnable game as well. So, I mean, you want to see them come back with a good win against a good team, and they have some chances with the schedule they have coming up. But, yeah, I think they can turn it around. I still think they have the talent on the team. It's just a matter of putting it together, and that offensive line especially has to get back to playing the way they were in weeks 3 to 5.
Pete, I lied to you. I said final question, but you mentioned Jeff Schwartz. If you're the Giants based on the grades this year, how, if at all, would you work Jeff Schwartz back into that starting lineup? Who are you moving where? How are you fitting him back into that starting five?
I would put him in back in at that left guard spot where they initially had plans of putting him. Weston Richburg, give him some time to learn a little bit more on the bench and in practice, and even perhaps you can kind of bring him in for J.D. Walton. Justin, you always have the option of maybe putting Schwartz to right tackle and moving Justin Pugh inside, which, you know, I know has been discussed since Pugh was drafted, and I don't think it would be a bad move, even though I think Pugh is underrated as a right tackle. But I would start by going with the plan they had to start, putting Schwartz in at left guard and moving from there, because, you know, I think Richburg right now is probably the most the weakest link on the line, and the most inconsistent player as well.
All right, Pete. Appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
That's Pete Domlatis, Pro Football Focus. You can go to the website. You can get their premium content. That's a paid service, but they have all their basic stats available on profootballfocus.com. You can follow Pete at PFF Pete on Twitter. You can search for him as well. Lance, always some interesting stuff. And, you know, sometimes we see stuff that he doesn't, and he does see stuff that we don't, but I think pretty much everyone's on the same page here, where this team is at, where they have to get better, and where some of their deficiencies are.
Well, and the offensive line is the center issue right now, because you're talking about two straight weeks where if you're just watching the game and you're no expert, you could tell there's inefficiencies there. And if you read through what Pro Football Focus has done in terms of their study and how they've graded all the offensive linemen, there's an issue. Against the Eagles, it was pass protection, John. This week, it was run blocking. Penalties has been consistent over the last 2 weeks. It's got to start and end there. If you can fix the problem over the bye with the offensive line, you should improve the running game, and you should continue to give Eli Manning time. If you don't do that, it's going to be this up-and-down performance.
And winning the battle on the other side of the ball would also
Absolutely.
Help in certain situations, stopping the run and getting to the quarterback a little bit more. Let's open up the phones at 201-939-4513. Let's get to them and say what's up to Dre down in Atlanta. Dre, thanks for holding. We appreciate it. What's going on this morning?
No, not much is going on, fellas. I listened to the show yesterday, but I tell you what, I'm going to touch on offense, I'm going to touch on defense. The offensive line, if we played sound football on offensive line yesterday, we definitely would have beat the Cowboys, without a doubt. That game was very winnable. It was even with the defensive mishap, it was still within our realm to win that game.
Well, keep in mind, and not to interrupt you, Dre, I'll let you continue. I mean, it was a 7-point game when Larry Donnell had the fumble. So, I mean, you're absolutely correct that this was a very winnable game despite all of the issues that we've laid out.
Right. And then I look at, against the Atlanta game, we used our running backs more in the passing game than we have in the past two games. You know, they showed a lot of heart against the Cowboys, maybe because it's the Cowboys, and then they want to, you know, pitch an egg like they did in Philly. But, you know, as an outlet, as an emergency outlet, even though Eli was only touched once, you can still add more, you know, weapons into the passing game by throwing either Hillis, you know, or Andre Williams out there. And I don't mean necessarily in a screen, a wheel pattern, something just to give the defense something different to look at. You know, you have Odell Beckham, you know, have him, you know, run a fly pattern, run a nine pattern down, just to keep the defense guessing. You know, you can still hit your intermediate routes, but have someone streak down the field, you know, just to give him an option and know that Eli is a gunslinger and there's a chance he may throw a long ball. And after a while, when you keep dumping it, then it's like, oh, he's a decoy, and then boom, now you have a wide-open wide receiver down the field. You know, we have Indianapolis coming up. Their defense is sound. Their offense is sound. You know, even without the injuries, we can't use it as an excuse. We have to get our mind in and focus on the game at hand and do our job.
Yeah, Jay, frankly, the Colts are probably a more complete team than the Cowboys are, to be quite honestly. Offense, defense, balance, they're probably a little bit of a better team than Dallas is right now.
Correct, I agree. But even still, any team is beatable. But if play sound football, we should be able to do our job. We have, I believe that, you know, even with Ogletree, we'll put him in, you know, this game. Someone has to run down the field and take a safety with them so we can open up some things for either Randall or even Fields or, you know, I believe Kiwi needs to sit, either put him back at linebacker to help out there and put, you know, Robert Ears, who seemed to be getting a lot more pressure than Kiwi is, and DeMontre Moore just needs to increase his moves, you know, to be able to get to the quarterback because he's very predictable. But you guys can touch on that. I'll be listening in.
Thanks, Dre. Well, Dre, appreciate the phone call. And speaking of Kiwi, all of the position coaches spoke to the media today, John, and one of the things that Robert Nunn, the defensive line coach, alluded to was you could see Kiwi moved around now more to the inside to open up opportunities for Robert Ayers on the outside with Cullen Jenkins out of the lineup.
Yeah, I think Ayers has played very well. I think he does deserve more snaps out there, to be honest with you, whether he works inside as well in some of that three-technique pass rush situations. But again, in order to get him inside and Kiwi inside, you got to get into pass rush situations. You got to stop the run. So that's number one. And he was asked specifically about DeMontre Moore. And he said, yeah, he's getting better. He does some good things well, but none stress. He still has a lot of work to do in terms of first and second down, understanding what opponents are doing to try to stop the run. So until he gets better at that, you're not going to see a ton more of DeMontre Moore.
And similar to that, Corey Washington is in the same book where
and we got
they're
a tweet about that, by
looking
the way.
At him at practice every single day, and the coaching staff is still not at a point where they see consistency from him. And that's what I can't emphasize enough because, you know, a lot of the fan base is calling for Corey Washington to get more opportunities given Victor Cruz is out of the lineup. But, you know, as the Giants have shown throughout each and every season, if they're not seeing the consistency in practice, they're not all of a sudden going to throw a guy into the game. And Sean Ryan, the wide receivers coach, his exact quote was, "You earn playing time during practice." And they're not at the point where they feel Corey Washington has earned playing time in a game. So that's really where he stands at this point.
It tells you all you need to know that Kevin Ogletree was active over Corey Washington last week. They'd rather have a guy off the street that's been practicing for 3 days than Corey Washington. So I'm officially ending all Corey Washington discussion. You want to call and ask about it? I'm going to tell you the same thing. He's not good enough to get on the field. And that's going to be my answer. I'm going to move on. It's going to be that simple, folks. Just giving you a heads up ahead of time, the fact that Kevin Ogletree is active instead of him tells you all you need to know. He's a developmental player. He's not ready to play yet, and you're probably not going to see him until next year with a significant role on this team on offense, if at all. 201-939-4513.
I was just going to add, John, that we had the same conversations about Adewale Ajomo a few seasons ago. It was the same thing. Flashed in the preseason. Everybody was like, you got to get this guy out on the field. They were not seeing it on the practice field. As a result, that's why he was not active more often than not.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Dave in Washington, D.C. Dave, you're up next. What's going on?
Hey, Steve, man. Steve.
Steve, what's going on, man? How are you?
What's going on, fellas, man? You dropped my car yesterday, man. I was on hold for a long time. It dropped on me.
Steve, we didn't drop you.
We blame it on the technology. That's
okay,
what we'll do,
listen,
Steve.
I need a couple minutes, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm telling you, I got some serious issues going on. I'm going to start with the most pressing one. The most pressing one is, number one is, I do not like this knee-jerk reaction by the coaching staff by bringing in, another running back, Felix or whatever. Absolutely ridiculous. First of all, we still got Hillis, and more importantly, we got Cox. He's the change that we need. I know you guys are going to tell me, oh, Cox is not ready. He's not this, he's not that. I've seen him return the kick. He's explosive enough. We need to play him. We need to play him. And I don't like the message that it sends to Andre Williams, like it's his fault. Our offensive line is not consistent and not blocking. I don't know what we're thinking right now. I have zero confidence in the decision making that we're making. The linebacking core stinks. Jaquan Williams don't want to see this dude wear blue ever again. I came to tell you, it's one mistake after another. We're getting out coached. More than we're getting outplayed, we're getting out coached. And we have no identity. And that starts with the coaching. I mean, all this conservative stuff is time to let Eli go ahead. And if he's gonna make mistakes, let him make. I mean, but all this, not even throwing first downs to the sticks, it's ridiculous. I've had enough of it. We got to play to win. We got to impose our will, form our identity. Here we are, week 7, and we still don't have an identity. You know, I mean, what are we going to do with put Schwartz. I'm really not even sure he was, you know, I don't know where we're going to put Schwartz. It's just that, you know, it's, I just see one questionable decision after another about the coaching, and I'm not happy with the play calling. The linebacker core needs help. The offensive line needs help. But you tell me, what good is it? Why won't we play Cox? Please tell me that.
Well, but Steve, you just said it yourself. It's not Andre Williams' fault. If Michael Cox is back there, guess what? He's going to get hit by the line, behind the line of scrimmage, too, if the offensive lineman can't block anybody. And remember, the Giants haven't announced anything on Felix Jones. So, you know, that might be a report that's out there. Nothing's been announced. And trust me, I'll be the first one to tell you, Felix Jones doesn't have a whole lot left in the tank. I have no interest in playing Felix Jones. I got to be honest with you. So, again, and none of that is official. And I don't think Felix Jones, if he does at some point get signed, is going to come in here and take snaps away from Andre Williams. I would not be worried about that.
And just to clarify for the audience, there are reports circulating that the Giants brought in two running backs, Felix Jones, the former Cowboy, Alex Green, the former Packer. But that's not unusual during the bye week, John, where they bring in guys to work
out. And Steve, frankly, that should tell you more about what they think about Rashad Jennings' knee and his health than it tells you about anything else.
Well, listen, I feel like we need to give Cox the opportunity. Will y'all speak on that a little bit, please?
Well, you know, I'm not going to disagree with you, Steve. I mean, he does have the elusiveness factor, and he does have the mobility factor, but I'm going to have to side with John here and say it doesn't matter to me what running back you put behind this line right now. I don't see there being that much of a difference between what Michael Cox is going to give you versus what Andre Williams is going to give you. Point of emphasis, we just spoke to Pete Donalatis of Pro Football Focus. He said Andre Williams forced a career-high 5 missed tackles. So, I mean, how much more do you think Michael Cox is going to bring to the table? If Williams is able to force 5 missed tackles with a very questionable and suspect offensive line.
I'm in a total agreement with you. You know, but I'm saying, but first of all, if Jennings' leg is a question, which we all know it is, why not give Cox some more touches so we can start to see what he is going to be able to do in the regular season? This would be the perfect time, especially rather than keep running Andre Williams, since we just want to keep running the ball anyway.
Steve.
You know, the play calling is suspect. You know, I just feel like if we were so concerned about Jennings, start giving Cox a thing. I just think it brings the wrong message to who we already have, number one being Andre Williams and Cox. I think we need to be worrying about finding alignment, stop getting off the soapbox and bring Incognito in here is what we really need to do. So I just feel like there's other pressing concerns to sit there and worry about, you know, bringing all these running backs who really have nothing more to offer than the players we have on it. It just sends the wrong message, and it's a waste of time. I'm not going to go on forever, guys, but I'm not. I'd rather listen to somebody else talk today. I just had to get off my chest. But I have zero confidence in the coaching. Zero. So I just want to go on record with that, man.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
And to answer Steve's last point and his last question, they have the answers, John, currently on the roster to tweak the offensive line. They have Adam Snyder, and they have Jeff Schwartz, who there's no guarantee he's coming back week 9. However, he could come back week 10, but they're at least on the roster. The running backs, to me, are on the roster, too. I don't really think you're going to find the savior on the side of the street at this point in the season.
And you're not finding a savior on Michael Cox either. This guy was on the practice squad. He cleared waivers. Every other NFL team, had a chance to claim him and get him for nothing. And they said, no, we don't need Michael Cox. So I know Steve loves Michael Cox. I get it.
Oh, boy, does he ever.
It's like his favorite guy.
We got a Peyton Hillis fan base. We have a Michael Cox fan base.
And I understand that. But none of that's going to matter unless the offensive line blocks better. I mean, I appreciate the fan base. And I made this point yesterday, and I'll make it again very briefly. The fan base tries to find a couple things here or there. We say, well, if we wave the magic wand, oh, if we play Corey Washington, if we play Michael Cox, oh, if we do more two tight ends, if we put Beckham in the slot, you know, pick your one move, it's going to fix everything. Guys, it's a lot bigger than that. If it was just one easy move to get things fixed, it would have done it a long time ago. That's not what it's about. It is not going to be an easy fix. Everybody's got to play better across the board. And quite frankly, offensively, at least, because that's where the focus seems to be right now, somebody's got to go out there and make a play. I mean, look at those games that the Giants won. Guys in those games went out there and they made plays. Rashad Jennings made plays. Odell Beckham went up and got the ball. He made a play. In the last two games, who on offense has gone out there and made a play above the X's and O's? Made a guy miss a tackle, make a big run, do an extraordinary job blocking, catching, running, whatever. We haven't seen somebody step up and make a play, and you have one fewer guy that's going to be able to do that going forward because Victor Cruz isn't playing.
That's what we were saying after the first two games. Eli Manning needs playmakers. I'll just throw out a concept. more so than worrying about putting this wide receiver in or this running back in. And, you know, I apologize for repeating myself constantly, but I can't emphasize enough, if you want to get a spark out of the running game, then utilize the running backs in the passing game a little bit more. That, to me, would be the best concept that they could implement moving forward, more so than saying Michael Cox needs 5 carries, Peyton Hillis needs 7 carries, they should use this formation and that formation. Just utilize these guys in open space and try to get positive yardage. I don't think there's any crime in doing that, and you have the personnel to execute that.
Yeah, it's an option. And the other thing people are saying, try to get the ball down the field now, and all of a sudden people want to ditch the short passing game now and chuck a deep throw at Odell Beckham. So
everybody's got their own different philosophy at this point.
201-939-4513. Anthony's out on Long Island. Anthony, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling in.
You got it, Anthony. What's on your mind?
Hey, well, I know hindsight's 20/20, guys, but I really just felt that the approach to this game in Dallas was so conservative that it was extremely frustrating to the fans. And I know they want to keep a balanced passing attack and a rushing attack, but consistently throughout the game on offense, they kept running the ball on second and long over and over and over, and it was setting up these exasperating third and longs. And on defense, they might have blitzed like twice in the entire game. Going up against an offensive line like Dallas, how do you not take a few chances for the blitz? I understand they're going to give up some big plays by doing that, but I'd almost rather that happen than have these exasperating drives where the defense can't get off the field and Dallas is converting all these first downs. But then when you saw later in the game, when the gloves were off, the Giants needed a quick score, and Eli was having more control and they were passing a lot more, the offense looked much better. And I know it's possible that Dallas' defense was on their heels because they had the lead, but I just feel like that approach is so much better for this team and different than last year's conservative offense that fans are tired of.
Well, but I would make the argument, Anthony, that throughout the course of the last 2 years, whenever the Giants went to the hurry-up offense, whether it be in the Kevin Gilbride system or the Ben McAdoo system, they've always looked 10 times better than the normal flow of the offense.
Yeah, but Anthony, hit it. A lot of that has to do with the way the defense is
correct.
Playing.
Absolutely.
Teams
well,
adjust.
The Cowboys were up by 2 touchdowns,
they
and that's the
play
drive
soft
you're talking
defense.
About.
They
yeah,
play
of course.
Soft.
They're going to make sure everybody stays in front right. as opposed to take chances and get creative. I mean, that was the philosophy of Rod Marinelli. I don't blame him. I think every defensive coordinator in that spot would say, all right, guys, we're up by 2 scores. You don't have to worry about getting the big sack, forcing the fumble. Just make sure you keep your offensive player in front of you. And that's exactly what the Cowboys did, and the Giants took advantage.
Yes, I understand that isolated incident. Yes, you're absolutely right, and I agree with you. But in your opinion, do you feel that they're better in that hurry-up stage? You said even when Gilbert was the offensive coordinator, they were better in that regard. Personally, I think so. Even in games
I would agree. Yeah.
that has had to take chances. And I thought that we'd be seeing more of this in the McAdoo offense. I understand it's a
Anthony,
West Coast
were,
style.
Anthony,
but they're
they,
not taking chances.
Yeah, but, Anthony, they played the no-huddle offense almost the entire first half. I mean, the Giants were rarely
yeah, it,
ever in a
yeah.
huddle the whole first half, and they still couldn't score.
I know, I understand. I'm sorry, just to be clear.
Yeah.
But no huddle, yes, they're doing that. But the pace was just not nearly as fast.
Well, and part of what you're getting at, and I think what Anthony's trying to hit home here, John, is the fact that in that drive when they scored, it was basically one pass after another, whereas earlier in the game, they were doing no huddle, but the runs were slowing down the flow of the system.
Right.
Is that pretty much what your point
is? That is what I'm trying to
articulate.
Okay,
just wanted for clarification.
All right, Anthony, yeah. stick with us. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes from Eli Manning yesterday, okay?
Sure.
This is one question for him. He was asked, you guys seem determined to stick to the run even when you're not having success with it. Is that the philosophy of the organization? This was Eli's answer. I'm going to give you 2 relatively long answers here, so stick with me. This is what
Absolutely.
Eli said. You've got to run the ball. It wasn't like we were running, hey, we've got bad looks and we're going to throw it. If they're stacking the box, we've got to throw it. But they're playing 2 safeties deep and soft. You've got to be able to run the ball versus those looks. They're good run looks. We weren't getting much success with it, and that makes it tough. It's going to be tough to throw against those looks as well. And when you give up sacks and interceptions, bad things happen against those looks. They were dropping people deep, and we've got to run the ball in those situations. And this is what he continued on to say. It's tough. It's tough in this league if you sit back there and throw it 50 times a game. That puts a lot of pressure on the offensive line, which, by the way, played terribly the week before against Philly. That's my words, not his. And the receivers, because you're going to get a lot of coverage. When you're running it and you have a lot of commitment to the run, they're going to bring a safety to the box and it's going to give you some better throwing situations. We're going to be committed to doing it, and we just have to get back to where we're getting successful runs. It's not like we've got to run for 50 yards, but on first and second down, when they're giving you run looks, we're giving you good run looks, rather. We've got to get those 4 and 5 yards just to keep the down and distance in shape. We're just having too many runs where we're losing yards. We're getting negative yards. We can't go backwards. That's what hurts you. And I think that's the point. If the defense is showing you two safeties deep and they're going to show coverage, it's going to be hard to throw against those types of packages anyway.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that quote with Eli. It's a great, great quote he had there, and I obviously am almost always going to agree with Eli. However, I just felt that consistently running on second, I have two more things to say before you guys cut me off. Consistently running on second and long throughout the entire game is very predictable. And if the line is struggling, you can't be predictable. That's just how I felt. And secondly, I don't understand why they're not blitzing. Rushing four against Dallas's offensive line was almost a waste of time. And I know JPP and Jonathan Hankins showed up, and the front four has to play better. I understand that. But at what point do you realize what's happening and have to take that chance? Because I know the secondary is banged up, but if it's banged up, you can't expect them to cover so well and you're only rushing four. You have to take chances. And I just felt the coaching staff was a little on their heels in a game that was huge for the Giants this year.
Well, it was an issue. They were not getting to the quarterback consistently. They were not showing a lot of blitz packages. And appreciate the phone call, Anthony. And that is something Perry Fuel and Company are going to have to go back to the drawing board. I think that Anthony did allude to the fact, and maybe this was why they didn't throw all of a sudden the wolves towards Tony Romo, is they were concerned somewhat with the secondary, and they didn't want to all of a sudden bring everybody to Tony Romo so then he has a great opportunity to take advantage of the secondary. They felt, you know what, let's try to keep everybody in front of us, and in hindsight, it didn't work out. I'm not going to sit here and say that the scheme was to perfection, because it wasn't. There were a lot of big plays that were given up. There were a lot of missed tackles, too. And let's not overlook that. There were 13 missed tackles in this game by the New York Giants defense as a whole. Now, that's not necessarily that people were out of position. That's the fact that you're there, but you're not executing and you're not bringing players down. Dez Bryant, for example, he could have been brought down. He shifted in and out of traffic. He turned what could have been maybe a 10-yard catch into a 44-yard gain. Same thing with DeMarco Murray. Could have been brought down, draws the contact, and then winds up turning it into a 20-yard run.
Here's the bottom line to me. People want more blitzing. Guess what? You're playing coverage. You're still getting one-on-ones, and Dez Bryant was killing your best cornerback, okay? What happens if you bring pressure? Then you got Terrence Williams lined up one-on-one and Zach Bowman. You got Jayron Hosey lined up one-on-one with somebody in the slot. At one point in this game, Lance, Tony Romo was averaging 19 yards per completion. That's what the Giants playing coverage. Could you imagine the big plays if the Giants were blitzing? And generally speaking, good quarterbacks in this league will kill the blitz. You blitz the young guys that are inexperienced. You play coverage against the better guys. And Romo still completed 17 of 23 for 279 and 3 touchdowns against coverage. This is what guys playing deep, two safeties deep. And the Giants still couldn't stop it. So I really don't think blitzing is going to help when you're lining up your corners, who are your fourth and fifth quarterbacks on the roster, against the Cowboys starters. That's not going to work.
The matchups just were not in their favor to blitz. Plus, let's also not forget, DeMarco Murray's a good receiver for his position, John. He wasn't even utilized that much as a receiver in this game. You could easily dump it off to him, and Tony Romo's done that time and time again. Same thing with Philadelphia. Yeah. You want to blitz Nick Foles? Fine, blitz Nick Foles. What Foles will do is he'll dump it off to Sproles, he'll dump it off to McCoy, and then all of a sudden, everybody will be a deer in headlights.
And screen passes, too, by the way. The Cowboys will run screens to Dunbar and to Murray.
The offense is going to capitalize on the chances that the defense takes. Now, they're going up against a Colts team coming up after the bye. Keep in mind, you have Ahmad Bradshaw, who's a good receiver, and you have Trent Richardson. So, Andrew Luck's the same thing. Blitz Andrew Luck. Good luck. He won't have to look for Hilton. He won't have to look for Nix. He won't have to look for Reggie Wayne, who, by the way, is hurt and could miss that game. He's just going to dump it off to the running backs, and they've done plenty of damage through the air.
I will take two more calls before we say goodbye, and this guy's in heaven right now because he can call up after two straight losses and be even more negative than usual, and that's Charlie up in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's going on, pal?
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Only you get joy out of this. And it's amazing.
By the way,
it's
true. It's unbelievable.
Hey, look, I've been telling you. I told you back in April we needed a pass rush. I don't care who you have in the secondary. If you don't have a pass rush, it doesn't matter. We don't have a pass rush. I thought our offense actually played very well. Pretty well. Eli played very well, but we have to play a total mistake-free game on offense to win because we have a defense that can't get off the field on third down. And if you have a defense that can't get off the field on third down, it is a bad defense.
And Charlie, by the way, people complain about the Giants not throwing enough or running it too much. You mentioned time of possession. All of a sudden, if you're running up and down the field throwing a lot of passes, the Cowboys are going to kill your time of possession. Your defense is going to get tired, and they're going to play even worse than they did when they were at full stamina.
Yeah, I thought the offense played well, but you can't make penalties. You can't make
you can't fumble.
You know what I'm saying? But I thought the offense. I wasn't worried about the offense with Eli. I was worried about the defense, and we don't have a defense because we don't have the players. That's the problem. You still got players in the secondary who don't know where to go. And I'm going to say it again: if Will Hill was there, that would never happen. And he had a great debate with the Ravens this week. And he could have been playing for us if Coughlin and Jerry Reese had a little patience and a little common sense in their head saying, let's wait 6 weeks and see where we are. Maybe we'll need him. If we don't, we'll cut him then. But, of course not. We can't do that.
Charlie, I am not going to engage you on this Will Hill debate again. You know where I stand. Let's move on to the next step.
Well, but Charlie, we can even take it past Will Hill. I think that you also need to take into consideration that they're missing a lot of other playmakers and personnel. You know, it's not just Will Hill. It's DRC not being 100%. It's John Beeson being in and out of the lineup.
Walter Thurman.
Tremaine McBride. So when you
Colin Jenkins.
Yes.
Correct. When you say the Giants' defense doesn't have the players, I would say, Charlie, they had the players. The problem is nobody anticipated all of these injuries.
We always have injuries. Every year we have a ton. But let me say this. We had Terrell Thomas sitting out there. You think Terrell Thomas is not a better player than Fenner? I would pick Terrell Thomas up. He knows the system. He played pretty well for us last year, actually, with an ACL. Why not pick him up? Why not say, okay, he's a player. He's a veteran. Let's bring him in. Why?
Charlie, we got Percy Harvin.
We lost our greatest wide receiver.
Charlie, you just said the offense is not the problem. Hold on a minute. You want Percy Harvin.
I'm just saying he would have improved the offense immensely. He would improve special teams. Didn't he run a kickoff back in the Super Bowl for a touchdown, or was it a punt? I can't remember. But he would have upgraded.
He did return one for a score. Correct. Yes, he also
special teams.
Charlie has been injured time and time again. He played one game with the Seahawks last year.
And he's averaging 6 yards a completion this year.
Let's not forget about that.
But they got him for a six-round draft pick. That's why he wanted out of Seattle, because they weren't throwing him the ball. They were using him as a running back, which he is not.
Well, they were using him as a gadget player. Well, who's to say that the Giants are going to open the playbook up for Percy Harvin, though? I mean, that's a big assumption. We don't know that.
What I'm trying to say is we're not trying to get better. We should be out there getting the best players that we can. We got Marcus Coombs on our roster. We got James Brewer. We got Charlie Brown. I mean, my God. Jerry Reese is – come on, you got to admit this. Coon should not be playing. Put Bromley in, for God's sakes. You got a third-round draft choice. Play him.
Well, Charlie, I can tell you, we had a chance to talk to the assistant coaches today and talking to Robert Nunn, and the minute I mentioned Colin Jenkins' injury, he said, look, Jay Bromley's going to have an opportunity here, so you're going to have a chance to see Bromley get on the field to do something now.
Well, I should hope so. I mean, a little late, but I should hope so, because he was probably inactive last week, I imagine.
Yes.
And the other thing is, we need a pass rush. And I know you guys are saying you're not going to see more on the plays because he doesn't know how to stop the run. But the thing is, he can rush the passer. And that's what we need. We need to put pressure. The reason we won the Super Bowls is because we put pressure on quarterbacks.
But the reason you put pressure on the quarterback is because you had him in third and long because he did a decent job stopping the run.
That's right. And why aren't we stopping the run? Because we let Justin Tuck go and we let Lindell Joseph go.
And John Beeson's injury has something to do with that, too.
We figured out last year how to stop the run, and we let the two guys who could stop the run go. I understand letting Joseph go. He wants a lot of money. But letting Justin Tuck, our captain, go was ridiculous.
JPP's been very effective, Charlie, against the run this season. Hankins been good against the run. Now, John just mentioned Beeson's been in and out of the lineup.
Jenkins has been good.
It's not as if they got rid of everybody that could stop the run. I mean, I think that's blowing things out of proportion.
And Jameel McClain's been pretty good against the run, too.
Yo, then we only getting gashed for like, you know, 150 yards.
But Charlie, part of that is missed tackles is what I'm talking about. I think, yes, part of it is the scheme.
Who's missing the tackle?
Everybody. It's across the board. I mean, to single out one player would be wrong. It's the secondary. It's the defensive lineman. I mean, you could pinpoint at least one guy that has at least each one missed tackle. It's all across the board. It's a team-wide issue.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right,
I appreciate it, man. I want to get to one more call, Charlie, before we say goodbye. I appreciate it, as always. Give us a call back. And by the way, we'll have a show tomorrow. Lance and Anita will be with you. And then we're off Thursday and Friday. We'll be back with you, Lance and I, next Monday. So you can check out Big Blue Kick Alive. But we're taking a long weekend, and if you don't like it, it's too bad. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Roldy in Bayshore. Roldy, what's up, pal?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance. How you
guys
doing?
Long time no speak, Roldy. How are you? By the way, where's your boy Shakes? I haven't heard from that guy in like 3 weeks.
It's been a while.
He's here. He's, you know, doing his show, the shakedown and everything, but he's there.
He's big time at us, Meadow. He's big time.
I'm sure he's listening. But listen, I just wanted to point out, like, listen, I mean, I respect everybody's opinion when they call up the show, but I think everybody is misunderstanding what's really going on. I mean, everybody wants to blame Jerry Reese. Everybody wants to blame Tom Coughlin. Jerry Reese changed the whole roster last year to bring in players. I think, and I think decent players. It's not his fault that DRC is not 100%. It's not his fault that John Beeson can't really stay on the field. We're missing the point, Giants fans. We're missing the point. The point is, let's stop making mistakes. So let's stop getting penalties. We're up to a tie game in the half, 14-14. We're driving in the third half, and then we go backwards because of penalties. Stop playing the blame game. It's not Tom Coughlin's fault. It's not Jerry Reese's fault. Jerry Reese did his job, what he can do to bring in guys via free agency. And I think the front office did a good job, a decent job in the draft. The players that's getting paid big money than all of us that calls up on the radio show has to play well. So it's the guy, it's the personnel. We're missing the point. We're making mistakes on defense. We're miscommunication. We're missing assignment. Guys not staying within their gaps. We're making penalties. We're fumbling the ball, but the fans want to call up and missing the real thing. The real thing is the penalties, the mistakes that we make. It's not Tom Coughlin. It's not Jerry Reese. We were always blaming Gilbert, which I never had a problem with Gilbert. Very few. Yes, there's times I don't agree with him, but the guy won a Super Bowl in 2000 and 2011 with that defense. I don't understand the fans, and I respect every fan, don't get me wrong, but we're missing the point here. Jerry Reese and the front office did what the best they can to bring in guys that we were all excited before the season. We were all on Twitter saying, wow, yo, Jerry Reese is doing a good job. Now that the players are not performing, everybody wants to bash Jerry Reese. Everybody wants to bash Tom Coughlin. Come on, Giants fans, come on. We're smarter than that, man. We New York Giants fans, man. We know football, man. But right now, it seems like we're not knowing football. Watch the game. We're hurting ourselves. The Giants are hurting themselves.
Right on.
Well said, Roldy.
That's
keep preaching, Roldy. Keep preaching.
In New York, you got to know your football, man. Know your football. Three mistakes, turnovers, miscommunication. Stop dumb penalties. In the third quarter, we had a chance. In the third, we're driving, and then we go backwards, man. The last game, it seems like it was like 3rd and 20 every single time. But yet, we want to blame Tom Coughlin. We want to blame Jerry Reese. You want to know what, Giants fan? I'm not blaming it, either one, because Jerry Reese, front office, did the best they can to get guys via free agency. They did a decent job in getting all captains in the draft. So I'm not doing that. I'm putting it all on the players. Players are getting big time money. They need to perform.
Good way to end the show, Roldy. Thank you, bud.
He's fired up.
Excellent job, Roldy. Thank you very much, pal. We can lose him there, Greg. Thank you. Yeah, well, there you go. I can't really add much to that. I think he summed it up. Guys got to play better. Real quick, Lance, we got about 3 minutes to go in the show. Just want to touch on some of the things we heard from the assistant coaches today that I thought were interesting. One thing I heard from Peter Jitte, we were kind of both running around to different people, so I like to hear your take, too. We might actually heard different things over the course of the morning. A couple things that I took note of. I think we'll see what happens with, you know, I think Dempsey and Stevie Brown, we'll see more of a rotation with them moving forward. I got that feeling hearing from David Merritt. I think Jaron Hosey will be given an opportunity to play in the slot. I don't think we're going to see somebody else slid in there. I think it's going to be Hosey's job to win or lose. I mentioned DeMontre Moore. Robert Nunn could not say more better things about JPP. Thrilled with how he's playing.
Yeah.
Like the way Robert Ayers is playing. Let's see. Herman said McLean is the only reason we've been able to survive without Beeson pretty much in his versatility. He saved their bacon in that spot.
He was also complimentary of Devon Kennard.
Yes.
He's very happy with the progress of the rookie.
And Jaquan being a third on three-down linebacker now, he's very happy with him as well. On the offensive line, basically Flat said, look, this is, and that's Pat Flaherty, offensive line coach, nothing to do with comfort, nothing to do with chemistry, knowing each other. Guys are losing individual battles. They got to be better with their technique. They have to execute better. So we really, to me, put the pressure on the individual guys to do their job better than they've done the last couple weeks.
And I was going to add, when asked about what are they going to do when Jeff Schwartz is ready to come back, his answer was, we're going to put the best five guys out there.
He was not specific.
Wasn't specific, but he said we're going to put the best five guys out.
Right.
Now, you and I and everybody else could read into that as much as we want. The other thing that jumped out to me was Kevin M. Gilbride, the tight ends coach, who was the wide receivers coach last year, talked about Larry Dinnell and said he has seen major strides in Larry Dinnell's schematic changes, meaning how he is approaching
the smarter
physicality at the right line of scrimmage, how a simple hand motion is getting him so that he can get upon his routes. And that was something that was not evident too much during training camp.
And I talked to him as well on the two other notes on Dinnell, actually. He said the reason he had those two games of no production because teams were focusing on him more. It wasn't anything Larry did poorly. There was just more of a focus on covering him. And also, the one thing he really needs to work on still is the run blocking. And he made a point that, look, he's working with them every day. He thinks he has the ability to do it. He just has to do a better job of doing it. So that's been a big focus of them trying to get better in that regard. Sean Ryan had a lot of glowing things to say better about Odell Beckham Jr. Said Reuben Randall still needs to improve in every aspect of the game, making those tough catches for one, and just being more consistent. That's the stuff that jumped out at me. Anything else hit you?
Well, we hit on Corey Washington off the top, and Sean Ryan also spoke about him. Yeah, those, to me, were the biggest storylines coming out of the coaches' interviews. The one other thing I wanted to add about Dave Merritt, the safeties coach, he also was asked about Antrell Roll being moved back into the slot, perhaps.
I missed that.
Where he was used before. And he said, listen, Antrell Roll is of the mindset he's going to do whatever is possible to help this team win.
And then Dave Merritt played, nobody would take away his safety from him and put him in a corner.
Yes, basically. That was the answer. I would be surprised if they get to that. What you had alluded to earlier, Hosley is the first man up right now. They're going to try to continue to groom him, try to hope that he can tweak his mechanics and get him to stay healthy, number one, because the last thing they want to do is lose a third corner slot.
Lance, you're with Anita tomorrow. Enjoy it. I'll be here tomorrow. I will not be on the show, and then we'll be back with you on Monday, Lance and I, for Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're off Thursday and Friday, but you can check out all our archives. If you missed any shows, you can check them out on Giants.com or on the mobile app. You've been watching Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings on Giants.com. And, of course, folks, DraftKings listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. For Lance Mendel, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a great day.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.